And now, the dawn of one of the most successful record companies in the history of rock and roll, Motown. We begin with their first million seller, recorded October 15th, 1960.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, "Son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride." And then she said, "Just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand. Before you ask some girl for a handout, keep your freedom for as long as you can now. My mama told me, you better shop around.
Founder of the Miracles, Smokey Robinson.
First of all, we got together as a group in 1955 or 6, I believe. We were in high school. We sang at different local talent shows and so on and so forth. Shop Around was the third record that really made some noise for us nationally, but it was the biggest record that we ever had to that point. It was the first million seller, and it really, really got things moving, you know. Shop Around was recorded in 1960, and early in 61, we got a gold record. It really got us established as a group.
15 years after the Miracles' original version, Shop Around became a hit all over again for the Captain and Tennille. In 1961, the year that Shop Around became a gold record, four Detroit teenagers became the Marvelettes. Lead singer Katherine Anderson recalls their first million seller.
We worked mainly on the weekends because all of us were still in school, you know, and we didn't want to miss out on school too much, but we got a tutor to go with us so we could get our high school diplomas. I really enjoy policing Mr. Postman because I think to a lot of people, say for instance, like servicemen in particular, I imagine that there's quite a few fellas that don't get mail, and this is a thing, I think that might be one of the reasons that it really clicked the way it did, because maybe their wife or their girlfriend hadn't gotten a letter from them, or say for instance, like college fellas, if they're gone away or their girlfriends are gone away, they're looking for this letter for them, you know, sense of security.
Wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman. Take the top off
From 1961, the original Please Mr. Postman by the Marvelettes. The song was a hit again 13 years later for the Carpenters. Motown's originator, Berry Gordy Jr., recalls his founding philosophy.
I had always wanted to be a songwriter. I decided to write things more from feeling, because I wanted just a straight line approach with what I was trying to say to the people. And, you know, having been around a lot of the crowd coming from the ghetto and the blues-loving people and all that, you know, we really dug the type of things that reflected the society. And I felt that this was something that could be a very good force in American music and communicating with people.
In 1962, Berry Gordy communicated with a million seller that he wrote for the Contours.
You broke my heart, 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake 'em down.
Love Me from the Contours, a hit again 2 years later for the Dave Clark Five. In 1962, Smokey Robinson emerged as Motown's most prolific writer of hit songs. Most were about love.
I don't know. I guess my mind is just oriented towards that type of thought, or sad songs dealing with love. I think more people identify with these type of songs. You can start singing a happy song and it strikes a groove, you know, it'll strike a groove and people get happy and everything, but the sad songs get the reaction.
The Miracles from 1962, and You've Really Got a Hold on Me. The next year, Marvin Gaye picked up a pen and wrote his own hit.
I don't know what ever prompted me to write a song. I imagine my wife had something to do with it. I was very much in love, I think, at that time with my wife. And that's why I wrote it, I think. And when I recorded it, I was thinking of it very much.
The first top 10 hit of Marvin Gaye is next on the History of Rock and Roll. The history of rock and roll continues with the first top 10 hit of Marvin Gaye. Pride and Joy from Marvin Gaye, whose first backup group had been three Detroit schoolgirls. Martha Reeves recalls her beginning as leader of those girls, the Vandellas.
Upon graduating from high school, I had had a little bit of experience in singing, but didn't know what would be my livelihood, didn't know what I'd make a career of, because, well, everybody's kind of quite like in question about what their future is going to be when they're 17, 18 years old. And I came over to Motown with a group, and we were told at that time that they weren't taking any more auditions, and just don't call them, they'll call us. I wanted to belong and be a part of, and decided just to be a secretary. One of my jobs were making promos for different artists, and I happened to make one for Mary Wells, who didn't show up for a session, luckily for me, because they took the track, and it was our first release called I'll Have to Let Him Go, which didn't sell but about three copies, and I think we bought all three of them. Right after that, we got Coming at These Memories, and from then on, it's been top 20, top 10, and we got kind of spoiled.
Love you gone from
Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, and Come and Get These Memories from the spring of 1963. 4 months later, Martha earned her first million seller.
Heatwave was cut, I think, in 64. It was when, I think, the Charleston sound was trying to be revised. It has a beat similar to the Charleston, which is also similar to Quicksand. We got in kind of the same kind of a groove with those two particular records. The thrilling thing about Heatwave was the fact that while it was number 10 across the nation, I think, there was a heatwave in Los Angeles, and they used it as a news spot.
Martha and the Vandellas and Heatwave from 1963. 12 years later, the song was a hit all over again for Linda Ronstadt. 1963 was also the year that Marvin Gaye got a little help from his friends.
Holland Dozier and Holland came to me one day and they said, "Gee, Marvin, well, we've got a great thing here." And I said, "Well, gee, I need something, you know." Diane and a couple of the other Supremes were in the studio, and they said, "Well, let's use them for backup voices." And so Diane thought it was great. She loves that kind of thing. She's so groovy. And she said, "Yeah, I'd love to get on that." And so Diane and the girls did background work on that. And I went in and recorded. I said, "Gee, man, I love it so much." I just went right in that afternoon and did "Can I Get a Witness?"
You girls, is it right to be left alone while the one you love is never home? I love too hard, my friends sometimes say, but I believe that a woman should be loved that way. But it hurts me so inside to see her treat me so unkind. Somebody, somewhere, it's unfair. Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness? Somebody, is it right to be treated so bad when you've given everything you had? Even tossing in my sleep.
But she caused so much misery that I forget how love's supposed to be somebody, somewhere. Tell her it ain't fair. Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness?
Can I get a witness?
I want a witness. Come on up with me. Come on, witness. I want a witness.
Marvin Gaye and Can I Get a Witness? Another Motown song revived 8 years later by Lee Michaels. Next, a female singer-songwriter when the history of rock and roll continues. The history of rock and roll continues with a Motown sound and Mary Wells.
Nothing you can say can tear me away from my God. Nothing you could do, cause I'm stuck like glue to my God. I'm sticking to my God like a snap to a ladder, like birds of a feather we stick together. I'm from the start, I can't be torn apart from my God. Nothing you could do could make me untrue to my God.
My God.
Nothing you could buy could make me tell a lie to my God.
My God.
I gave my God my word of honor to be faithful.
My Guy from Mary Wells, who'd come to Motown as a singer-songwriter 5 years before. My Guy, in the spring of 1964, was her biggest hit. The same year brought million-seller number one to Diana Ross, Mary Wilson, and Florence Ballard, the Supremes. Diana recalls her first job at Motown as a secretary.
I moved to a street on the north side of Detroit, and Smokey lived about four or five doors away from me. And to know that Smokey Robinson lived down the street from me, it thrilled me to no end. And I used to sit and watch them rehearse on their basement steps. And I told him that I had a group. You know, if any time that he could listen to my group, I would really appreciate it. And he did set up an audition for us to go to Motown. And the only reason Barry saw us or heard us is because he happened to be passing through the studio at the time we were singing. And finally, after meeting Barry and trying to get a contract with the company, they decided that they might sign us if we go back and finish high school. Like, I was about in 11th grade, and I needed a job, really, to help my family out and also to get me carfare enough to get back and forth to the studio to try to do some background sessions. And he gave me a job, and it was about 3 months I worked there. I didn't do a thing except straighten off his desk, you know, try to straighten the papers. But it wasn't a real office anyway, because at that time, Barry used the whole building for working, and everybody kind of gathered in this room. They had a dart board. I know the Miracles used to come in there and throw darts at the dart board. That was a big thing. Everybody would bet money on who could get closest to the center mark. And so it was just a lot of fun at that time. It wasn't really work. But I only worked the summer, and I think he paid me like about $20. I gave up many times. In fact, every time I got to the end of my road, something nice would happen, and I end up singing again. But our first recording, we recorded Where'd I Love Go? And everybody liked it so much because they said it was a very sexy-sounding, young sound. And it was a nice song because it was melodic, and it just repeated, baby, baby.
Baby, 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 don't leave me. Oh, please don't leave me all by myself. I've got this burning, burning, yearning, feeling inside me, ooh, deep inside me, and it hurts so bad.
From the streets of Detroit came more young talent. Here's a lead singer for the Four Tops, Levi Stubbs.
The group, the Four Tops, consists of Rinaldo Benson, Abdul Faker, better known as Duke, and Lawrence Payton, and myself, Levi Stubbs. We all were raised in the same neighborhood. We just came up on the corners, I imagine, like most groups did. You know, and 1963, we went to Mr. Gordy, and he liked what we had to offer, and we had known him for some time, you know, and he was aware of our talent. Baby, I Need Your Lovin', first of all, it was extremely relaxed kind of thing. We'd sit around and talk and maybe sing a line at a time, and try to get a feeling for the tune and sit out and get a sandwich or a cold beer and wait an hour till the sandwich settled. And then we'd take another shot at it, you know, and luckily for us, we came up with a pretty good mood and cut it and came up with a smash.
Four Tops and Baby, I Need Your Lovin', a song remade just 30 months later by Johnny Rivers. The Four Tops original came out in 1964, a year remembered by Martha Reeves.
This was a very bad time all over the United States. We were just starting to have different confusions in different cities, the riots and the what have you. And I think the writers were inspired mainly to try an effort to get people to dance and be happy in the street instead of the riots. And it was really a great record. I really feel that we were blessed just to have the privilege of singing that particular song.
Martha Reeves goes Dancing in the Street next on the History of Rock and Roll. The History of Rock and Roll continues with the Motown sound of Martha and the Vandellas.
We'll be right back.
1964, the year of Dancing in the Street, saw the beginning of 12 number one hits for Diana Ross and the Supremes. Mary Wilson, an original Supreme, recalls one such hit and the group's early days.
The Temptations, well, they're now known as the Temptations, they were the Primes, and this was in 1959. They wanted a girls group to sing with them, not as a whole group, but as a separate group. So they went around the neighborhood, which we were living in at the time, and they were just asking girls if they would like to sing. So it wasn't very hard because everyone was standing on street corners singing. The Temptations rehearsed with us for hours and hours and hours trying to get it all together. And so they said, well, now we better get a name for you. And in those days, everything was the Etz. So they said, well, why don't you call yourselves the Primettes? And we said, great, you know, that sounds great. So we were the Primes and the Primettes. Baby Love is still my favorite record. It was our most popular. Everyone was singing, Baby Love, Baby Love.
Baby Love from Diana Ross and the Supremes. Diana recalls why their next number one record was released only 1 month later.
Baby Love and Come See About Me, they both were in the same album called Where Did Our Love Go? And the album was so big that we began to release things one right after a record began to go down a little bit, then we released another one from the album. And we only released Come See About Me because it was covered. It was getting ready to be covered by Nella Dodds, and we didn't think that was fair because, you know, we had planned to release it, but we didn't want to release it right away. So we released it, and at the same time, her record was out, and we kind of had a little battle, which I think was best, I guess, because we continued to work hard and try to get another hit record.
I've been crying, cause I'm alone. You
Come See About Me made it 3 number one records in a row for Diana Ross and the Supremes. And how sweet it was in 1964 for Marvin Gaye.
I was very happy with How Sweet It Is because I nearly cracked the number one spot. I went to number 5, and I remember that I hadn't had a record go that high in the charts previously. How Sweet It Is was my all-time favorite.
And downs, and there you were, with sweet love and devotion, deeply touching my emotions. I wanna stop and thank you, baby. What would I be without you in my life? Everything was just a bore. All the things I did seems I've done them before. But you brighten up all my day with a love so sweet in so many ways. I wanna stop and thank you, baby. I wanna stop and thank you, baby.
How Sweet It Is, a song revived more than a decade later by James Taylor. The music of Motown will continue in upcoming chapters of the history of rock and roll, but for now we're turning to two supergroups of the 1960s. The first was a quartet from Newark, New Jersey, which many call the greatest American group of the decade. The original members were Nick Massey, Tommy DeVito, Bob Gaudio, and Frank Castelluccio. We know him better by another name.
Hi, this is Frankie Valli. The Four Seasons story is coming up next on the history of rock and roll.